ULRN presents Topical Currents. Today we get a retrospective on the historic 2008 presidential election from political scientist, author, and blogger Dr. Diana Sheets. Good afternoon, it's Joseph Cooper. She contends that the victory of Barack Obama was based more on his personal narratives in the campaign rather than policy platforms. Of course, both candidates wrote books which chronicled their road to self-realization, and those books took on much different tones. Dr. Diana Sheets is a research scholar in the English and History departments at the University of Illinois. Her political blog is literarygulag.com. So stay with us. Topical Currents returns after NPR and regional news. Turn is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you at 7 past 1 o'clock. Both Senators John McCain and Barack Obama released autobiographies well before the 2008 election. Both men took different approaches. Today we speak with Dr. Diana Sheets, a political scientist and blogger, as well as a research scholar in the English and History departments at the University of Illinois. Her political blog is titled literarygulag.com. Dr. Sheets says Obama's election stemmed from his personal narratives rather than policy platforms, and that voters were more influenced by emotion than those policy programs. Dr. Diana Sheets joins me now from the University of Illinois in Champaign. Welcome to you, Dr. Sheets.
Thank you. It's nice talking with you, Joseph.
Diana Sheets, you look at the recent presidential race through the visage of literary criticism and historical methodology. Why and what does that mean?
Well, when I decided that I wanted to cover this historic election, I felt what I didn't want to do was provide ordinary journalistic coverage. There are other people far more qualified than I to provide a lot of details and dates, and you know, they're tied into the Washington Circle. What I wanted to really figure out was what were the underlying influences that were going to drive the election, and how might, you know, this be historically important. So, you know, if you view journalism as the first draft of history, I wanted this to be even more than a first draft.
So what is behind that, and what about the emotional narratives that were used by Barack Obama, and how did McCain fit into, what about his narrative?
Okay. There are three books that are done by liberals that were trying to figure out why in the for most of the 20th and 21st centuries, the Democrats were having trouble getting into power. And two of them are linguists, and another is a cognitive science guy. And they ended up coming up with some very interesting theories. So the path-breaking book by George Lakoff is called Moral Politics. And what he basically was trying to analyze as a linguist is how do liberals and conservatives think? And he came up with the metaphor that the government is a family, and that what drives our voter preferences are unconscious values that are based on how we were raised. And you cannot begin to imagine what the impact of this was. I mean, he's basically been embraced as the spokesperson for political operations for the Democratic Party. And what he basically concluded is that voters, you know, are voting their emotional values based on family values. And so just to give you some idea, for the liberals, their worldview is what he would call based on a nurturing or nurturant parent. So it's they embrace values that are love, empathy, care, fairness, social responsibility, It's a child-centric universe, and it's very maternal in its outlook. The conservative worldview is a fundamentally different worldview. It views the world as, life is difficult and the world is fundamentally dangerous. That's a quote from Lakoff. And so the words that they use that shape their values are words like character, discipline, self-reliance, backbone, standards, authority, competition, hard work, freedom, property rights. So you couldn't have two more fundamentally different views. And so when politicians are trying to influence who we vote for, they are playing on these values through the use of language to get voters to emotionally vote for their candidates. And there's a wonderful book by Drew Weston called The Political Brain. He's a neuroscientist, and he's, put wires on people and put images and asked them values and then traced how they respond in terms of their brain activity based on political things. And so what you conclude is that voters are emotional, not rational, that linguistic influences shape who we vote for. And what the decision on the part of the Democratic Party was that the 2008 presidential election would be fueled by narrative, and that the reason that they had been losing is that basically they felt that the Republicans told a better story. So they were absolutely determined in this election to make sure that they were the ones that had the better story that captured the heart and the imagination of Americans.
You mention in your blog and articles that Obama was the first president to be elected who was influenced, who matured during the postmodernism period. But hasn't emotionalism and narrative been a part of presidential politics for many, many years and decades?
Oh, certainly. But I think what's interesting, as far as I'm concerned, is that the machinery of how we run these political elections has gotten so systematic and scientific almost that they have a way of tracking at every given moment how the voters are responding. And so they have all of these fine-tuned techniques and methods to analyze what is working in terms of their strategy and what isn't. In terms of the autobiographical stories of both candidates, what I found really interesting, what's also interesting about the candidates is they reflect these worldviews. So I would argue that Barack Obama's worldview is a nurturant parent worldview. He's looking for fairness and social justice. And by contrast, John McCain's worldview was that the world is a harsh and difficult place, and you have to be prepared for challenges from outside influences.
But as far as emotional narratives, McCain, though he didn't personally mention it too often, I mean, the abused prisoner of war, the Republican maverick, mm-hmm. he had his own narrative of self-realization.
Oh, absolutely. But I think what was interesting about their two autobiographies is that I would argue that the John McCain autobiographical story, which is The Faith of My Fathers, is an external autobiography. It's a war hero story about what happened when he was shot down in Vietnam and was a prisoner of war. These are external events that happened to him and how he developed the courage by recognizing the values of America and how that shaped who he was. Now, of course, there's always myth-making associated with autobiography, but that's his story. There are a series of external events, and he responds to those. What's interesting about the Barack Obama story, Dreams of My Father, is it is an internal journey. It's inside his mind, inside his consciousness. There's the external events are there, but they're very vague, they're very fuzzy, and basically it's a subjective state of mind. And I can't remember a presidential candidate ever having an autobiography like that. It's a very novelistic autobiography and a very feminized one.
So you're using the mechanizations of literary criticism to assess autobiographies by the candidates.
Literary criticism and political, historical analysis. Those are my training. I think that this is what I bring uniquely to the analysis of the campaign. And I think you have to. If the Democratic Party and the Republican Party made a decision that the things, and they know this very well, that people do not respond to facts. I mean, there's a great, great quote by the former operative for the Democratic Party, who basically said that the problem with the Democrats, it was James Carville, he said, the Republicans, they produce a narrative, we produce a litany. And so the Democrats produce a list and the Republicans produce a story. So both parties decided that they were going to compete on narrative, and David Axelrod really was the campaign strategist behind the narrative story for Barack Obama. And the focus was not on facts and figures and programs. Everyone who was watching Barack Obama's speeches noted the relative lack of content. It was a personal narrative, and it was his personal story and his personal autobiography that were really the centerpiece of his campaign.
We're speaking with Dr. Diana Sheets. She's joining us from Champaign, Illinois, at the University of Illinois. She's a research scholar and also a political scientist and blogger. Dr. Sheets, stay with me. We're going to take a short break and be back with more.
Okay.
And we return with today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper with you. And we're discussing the election of 2008 with Dr. Diana Sheets. She's a political scientist and blogger, and also is in the research, a research scholar in the English and History departments at the University of Illinois. And again, Dr. Sheets, you're quite a prolific blogger. If people want to read more of your articles and comments, where can they go?
They can Google me, Diana Sheets, or they can go to directly to my website. It's Literary Gulag, and you'll find monthly essays on recently on the election, but also on literary criticism.
Dr. Sheets, tell me how Barack Obama's post-election and pre-inauguration actions have fit into your literary criticism theory.
Okay. He's doing tactically some very, very smart things. Not surprisingly, but I think it's a disappointment to some of the people on the far left, but he's moved to the center, and his appointments are very, very top-notch appointments. For the economy, he's chosen Timothy Geithner, who was the head of the New York Federal Reserve, to be the Treasury Secretary, and Lawrence Summers, who was the Treasury Secretary under Clinton in the last 2 years. He's really, like Bill Clinton, he's been developing a very impressive brain trust, and it's in decided contrast to Jimmy Carter, who, billed himself as an outsider and really didn't know how to bring in the right resources and the right people to make Washington work on his behalf. But so he's selected some very impressive people, and he's going to need them because we're in a very difficult situation right now in terms of the economy, and he will need to move quickly and decisively in terms of stimulating the economy, which he will do.
You said earlier that many people responded to Obama's message because of his narrative and voted out of unconscious emotion. What about those Republican voters who were fed up with the current administration and voted for Obama because of that? Were they responding to his narrative or responding to the lack of efficiency and their loss of faith in the Bush administration?
Well, I don't think the narrative was compelling for them, but if you look at the Democrats who've been successful in the 20th and the 21st century, every time that they've come to power, it's been during an economic downturn, whether it's FDR or Bill Clinton or now Barack Obama. What's really interesting is up until the collapse of the economy, both candidates were almost dead even. It would have been too hard to call it. So, but by the third week in September, when Lehman Brothers failed, and that set off the whole crisis, that was the decisive moment that Republicans began to shift.
So you're saying the decisive moment wasn't the narrative?
Oh, the narrative was very important, he might have won anyhow, but it would have been a much, much closer election. I think what it's important to realize is that, in general, after two terms of an administration, the public wants to shift, and they're more inclined to vote for a different candidate and to vote for change, but they won't just do that. They need a compelling reason. This will go back to my argument that voters are emotional and not rational. People were terrified. They watched life savings disappear. They were very, very frightened. And also, it would be my argument that when an economy has a huge downfall, what people do is they shift from a patriarchal, independent worldview to wanting a nurturing parent or mother. They're very afraid for their future. They want to know there's going to be some protection. And so the Democratic narrative becomes more enticing when you're watching, all your savings disappear. You're worried about your job. You're worried about the cost of living and fuel and everything else.
Dr. Diana Sheets, we only have a few minutes left in our segment before we bring on photographer Annie Leibovitz. But you made a reference that in this postmodern era of Barack Obama, that Americans are more defined by their differences rather than commonality. Are you sure about that?
Well, that's going to be the... I am sure about that. One of the things that they talk about, if you have to take these undergraduate courses or teach them, is they talk about the old melting pot. They no longer refer to that. They talk about a salad bowl. And so it's not the items that hold together the salad. It's all the different components. The real challenge for Barack Obama will be, can he unite all these disparate groups? And that's really... far from clear. And in fact, there was a recent analysis by someone at the New School in New York that basically talked about that the problem that there is no uniting force. Certainly, Barack Obama would like to believe that we can go beyond political partisanship, but it doesn't seem to be evident right now in our society.
Well, I certainly want to thank you, Dr. Diana Sheets. She is a political scientist and blogger, also a research scholar in the English and History departments at the University of Illinois. And once again, how can people see your political blog, Dr. Diana Sheets?
Thank you. They can go to my website. It's www.literarygulag.com. Or they can search me under the name Diana Sheets, and they'll find the blog.
That's Sheets with two E's.
Sheets with two E's, just like sheets on a bed, S-H-E-E-T-S.
Okay, well, we certainly appreciate you coming on our program this afternoon, Diana.
Thank you. It was really a pleasure to talk with you.
Okay, very good. We're going to come back with photography legend Annie Leibovitz.